Hi, this is Kevin Donahue, author of House and Houses in Washtenaw, and you're listening to A Little Dead Podcast, your place for full frontal nerdism.
Hey y'all, McPierce here. Welcome to episode 61 of A Little Dead Podcast, your place for full frontal nerdity when it comes to animation, reanimation, and the consumption of living flesh by the living dead. This week, I watched Night of the Living Dead Reanimated, the visual reimagining of George Romero's classic horror film. Misfit Boy is going to get us in the zone with an episode from season 4 of The Twilight Zone called Miniature. And given that they went from a half an hour format to a full hour then, he's going to review just one episode, but in more depth. I'll be talking with Rob Houschild and Paul Gutierrez from Wild Eye Releasing, both of whom worked on the DVD for the film Night of the Living Dead Reanimated. Unfortunately, though, my talk with Laurie Beckman's going to be postponed until next week. But we are starting up a new contest this week, which I'll tell you about in a few minutes. But first, the news.
You're watching Channel 4 News with five-time Emmy Award-winning anchor Ron Burgundy and Tits McGee.
Good evening, San Diego. I'm Veronica Corningstone. Tits McGee is on vacation.
Robert Rodriguez is in active negotiations now to direct the Deadpool film. The film is going to be a spin-off of the character from the X-Men Origins Wolverine film rather than a reboot, and no schedule has been announced yet for the film. Sci-Fi Channel announced 7 new scripted television series. Ball and Chain is about a couple who, as they are breaking up with each other, are hit by a meteorite. It gives them superpowers which only work when they're in close proximity, even though their breakup was anything but friendly. Me and Lee is about a 20-something guy who gets back surgery that goes wrong. In comes Lee Majors, who is the Lee from the title, and he makes the guy bionic, and that ties the two of them together. Orion is about a female relic hunter in space who tracks down, and sometimes steals, artifacts to then sell on the black market, all while trying to avoid bounty hunters who are looking for her. Sherwood is a 23rd century take on Robin Hood, but in space. Legendary has Kevin Sorbo playing a former television actor who was enlisted to help fight underworld creatures in Los Angeles. Human Relations is about an office temp who finds out his new place of employment isn't an ad agency, but is instead an office cover for an alien invasion. And Zeros is about the zombie extermination and removal operations, or Zeros, team who find and remove zombies in a small town. Sci-Fi also collected together 106 of the coolest costumes from San Diego Comic-Con last week and put them together for your viewing pleasure. So be sure to check them out at the link in the show notes. And speaking of lists, you know that promo I've been playing for the past few weeks for the Bone Bat Show Comedy of Horrors Film Fest? I got an email from Steve this week with the list of films that will be shown. 11 short films were listed, and also they'll be showing 2009 zombie horror film Doghouse, as well as the winner of the Bone Bat online competition hosted by IndieFlix. For more information on the film fest and for location details, check the show notes. Steven Spielberg's Terra Nova television series, which is about a time-traveling family, has been moved back a year. We'll get to see a teaser episode in the spring of 2011, but the series itself won't come out until the fall of 2011, which means that, since it's going to be on Fox, it'll probably be canceled for being, quote, too good by December of 2011. Okay, I take that back. Fox has burned us way too many times. They canceled great shows like Firefly, Brimstone, Roar, and Sarah Connor Chronicles, to name a few. But maybe, maybe, this time they won't. Yeah, and maybe pigs will fly. If you weren't sure about seeing Cowboys and Aliens when it comes out on July 29th, 2011, then here's something that might give you reason to go. Olivia Wilde, who plays Ella, just filmed a nude scene in front of a bonfire, naked. And on the subject of hotties, take a look at a picture of Megan Fox in a Voltron t-shirt. That link is in the show notes as well. A trailer for the remake of Don't Be Afraid of the Dark came out this week, the original of which is another podcast, which hits home for me since my daughter is going through night terrors right now. The film hits theaters on January 21st, 2011. Back in episode 56, I reported that Summer Glau was voicing Kara in the animated film Superman Batman Apocalypse. You can now check out a sneak peek and behind-the-scenes video for this film online. The animated film hits DVD and Blu-ray on September 28th. several teaser trailers came out this week. The first is for Bloody Bloody Bible Camp and is now available on our forums. It's a horror comedy about a transvestite serial-killing nun who brings hell to a summer Bible camp. And it has Ron Jeremy playing Jesus. Need I say more? The next teaser trailer is for the Avengers film. Not much more than Samuel L. Jackson as Nick Fury talking over the Avengers logo, but still, it's something for the film. The first minute and 7 seconds of the Lost epilogue came out this week. It shows what happened after Hurley and Ben took over as caretakers for the island. And in that minute, we see Ben on his first mission, to shut down the Dharma Initiative, the DVD set for Season 6, as well as the complete series collection, will be available on DVD and Blu-ray on August 24th. Warner Brothers and DC announced the name of the sequel to the 2009 game Batman Arkham Asylum, and its name is Batman Arkham City, and will be released in fall of 2011. A member of the Green Lantern film crew was overheard bragging that there are plans to make 3 total films. The second film is going to go into production prior to the first film's release, and the third film will be made based on how well the first film does in the theaters. And in real science news, Triceratops as a separate species is going away, at least as a separate species. 2 researchers have found data that indicates that what we know of as Triceratops was the juvenile form of Torosaurus. But don't let this make you sad that one of the most popular dinosaurs is going away. Even though it's the juvenile form, the realigned species will keep the name Triceratops, according to New Scientist magazine. Links for all stories can be found in the show notes and also in our forums at alittledead.multiply.com. And if you have some news you'd like to share, you can send it to me at alittledead@gmail.com or call the Little Dead comment line at 206-338-0665. And in listener feedback, we've got the following.
You know that I am called the Count, because I really love to f***. Sometimes I sit and f*** all day, but sometimes I get carried away. I f*** slowly, slowly, slowly getting faster. Once I start in f***ing, it's very hard to stop. Hey, faster, faster, it is so exciting. I could f*** forever, f*** until I drop. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, I love f***ing whatever the amount. 1, 2, 3, 4. Hey, yeah, 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 hey, yeah, yeah, yeah. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, that's the song of the Count. I f*** the spiders on the wall. I f*** the cobwebs in the hall. I f*** the candles on the shelf. When I'm alone, I f*** myself. Oh, yeah, I f*** slowly, slowly, slowly getting faster. Once I start in f***ing, it's very hard to stop. Faster, faster, it is so exciting. I could f*** forever, f*** until I drop. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, I love f***ing whatever the amount. 1, 2, 3, 4. Hey, yeah, 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 hey, yeah, yeah, yeah. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, that's his song. Oh,
it's a new month, and we've got a new contest here at A Little Dead Podcast. Paul Hungerford from Feudio has given us 3 prizes to give away. We've got 2 t-shirts, sized large, and a DVD of their collection of short videos called Nightmare House, Volume 1, to give away. The shirts feature one of the characters from one of my favorite videos of theirs entitled Bedfellows. To enter, all you have to do is send me an email with the subject of Nightmare House Contest, and I'll put your name into the Little Dead prize machine. Then, on August 28th, along with Paul Hungerford from Feudio, I'll announce the winners. One winner will receive a t-shirt and DVD, and the runner-up will receive a t-shirt. So don't wait, send your email now.
Visit www.thefearinside.com, where you'll find written reviews, video reviews, horror podcasts, and the science of zombies.
Find your fear Friday, August 13th at www.thefearinside.com.
Friday, the 13th.
Traveling through another dimension. A dimension not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of imagination. Your next stop, the Twilight Zone.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's installment of Get in the Zone. My name is Misfit Boy, and I'll be your tour guide through the fifth dimension. This week, we have a one-hour episode review instead of the normal two. But it starts someone you all may know. Now, everybody loved dolls at one point in their childhood. Girls had their favorite Barbies, and boys had their favorite superheroes like Superman, Batman, the Green Lantern, and many others. That, or their favorite Kiss figure, from as far back as I can remember. But what happens when a meek little man, played by none other than Robert Duvall, becomes obsessed with a dollhouse at a local museum? Well, before I tell you, let's hear from Mr. Macabre himself, Mr. Rod Serling.
To the average person, a museum is a place of knowledge, a place of beauty and truth and wonder. Some people come to study, others to contemplate, others to look for the sheer joy of looking. Charlie Parks has his own reasons. He comes to the museum to get away from the world. It isn't really the 60-cent cafeteria meal that has drawn him here every day. It's the fact that here in these strange, cool halls, he can be alone for a little while. Really and truly alone. Anyway, that's how it was before he got lost and wandered in to the Twilight Zone.
This episode is entitled Miniature, and it stars one of the giants of the silver screen, Robert Duvall, who plays Charlie Parks. He's a very meek individual who, well, let's face it, when you were born, and if given a handbook on how to act in normal society, poor Charlie never found the line that was handing them out. Charlie lives at home with his mother, who can be very annoying at times, but still loves her son nonetheless. Charlie's at work one day when the clock strikes 12 noon, lunchtime. Charlie heads out for a 60-cent lunch at the local museum. Unfortunately, the cafeteria is closed, so Charlie takes a look around the different exhibits. He comes across a dollhouse that looks way too realistic and stares at the female figure inside. Now, the female doll was carved from a banister in the home that the real woman lived in. The doll sitting at the piano starts to play, frightening Charlie yet mesmerizing him at the same time. He goes and asks the security guard, "How did they make the doll play that piano?" "What? You must have heard a little boy that snuck in a transistor radio into the museum. That doll, sir, does not move." So Charlie goes back to work, only realizes he's an hour and a half late. A note sits at his desk from his boss to come in the office. Now, while in his office, the boss, who's played the diner owner in the Real Martian Please Step Up episode I reviewed a while back, he asks him how he feels about his co-workers. "Well, I don't really know them," Charlie tells his boss. "You know, Charlie, you're never late or early. You are just always on time, and furthermore, you do exactly what is asked of you. But, unfortunately, you just don't fit in here with the rest of the co-workers, so I'm going to have to let you go. Now, Charlie doesn't even bat an eye at the fact that he's just been fired. He just gets up and leaves. Back at home, his mother is in tears after he tells her he was let go today. She tells him to go and lay down for a while and clear his head. The next morning at breakfast, Charlie's sister and brother-in-law are over, and his sister's husband informs him of a job opening for him. No thank you, buddy, he tells him, it's too far. He gets up, leaves, and goes back where? Well, to the museum. After a few days of going back and forth from home to the museum, Charlie's mother sends his daughter to follow him. Charlie's now talking to the doll, but gets no response. She follows him to the museum and asks if he would buy her a cup of coffee. At a local diner, she tells Charlie about how she knows why he goes to the museum every day. It's to be alone, because why? Well, he's scared. She tells him, at 30 years old, it's time to find a girl. So, she sets him up on a date. Now, we get to the part where, that night, he's walking with his girl on his arm and asks him why he's so quiet and that he must be the dangerous type. Yeah, sure. The date goes sour really fast. And after getting slapped in the face, he goes back to the dollhouse once again and is talking to the doll. Now the maid can be seen opening a door and a villainous type of man enters, hitting the maid over the head with his cane, then moving into the room where the love of his life sits. Don't you touch her, Charlie yells at the man and tells his love to run. She faints in the man's arms as the scene plays out like a silent film. Charlie's desperate to save the woman as the man carries her up to the bedroom. Grabbing a statue, Charlie breaks glass, only to be stopped by the security guard. Now the problems begin to start. He's then sent to a psychiatrist who tells him that the figures came to life in his mind. Have you seen her? Charlie asks. Yes, says the doctor as he opens a small box revealing the beautiful doll that possesses Charlie's heart. Do you have to take her back? Charlie asks. Yes, it is property of the museum, the doctor says. Weeks go by and Charlie's family comes to take him home. No more dreams of a doll being real. And back at home, Charlie's mother knocks on the door, but it's locked. Buddy breaks the door in, and Charlie can't be found in his room. So where is he? Hiding in the mummy's coffin at the museum. As Charlie talks to the woman in the dollhouse, she starts crying as if almost to hear the things Charlie's saying. Then we go back to Charlie's home. Charlie's family and his doctor feel they must go to the museum to find him, because that's where they're sure that he's at. And when they arrive, Charlie is nowhere in sight. One by one, they pass the dollhouse. Then the security guards happen to look inside the dollhouse and is terrified by what he sees. And what is it? Well, Charlie's sitting next to the woman he adores, smiling. Just smiling. Well, that's it for this week. See you next time. You know me. I'm Misfit Boy, and I'm in the zone.
They never found Charlie Parks because the guard didn't tell them what he saw in the glass case. He knew what they'd say, and he knew they'd be right, too. Because seeing is not always believing. Especially if what you see happens to be an odd corner of the Twilight Zone.
Sorry for the holdup, folks. There seems to be a slow-moving podcast up ahead, so we're going to have to sit here for a spell. You just remain seated with your headphones on, and we'll be right with you.
Darn it, the episode was just getting good.
Yep, I never miss this show. Now what are we going to do?
Well, we could tell folks about our show, the Disney Indiana Podcast.
Well, in our bi-weekly episodes, we discuss books, movies, music, theme parks, video games, and whatever else in the Disneyverse we want to talk about.
Playful spooks have interrupted our show. Please remain seated in your MP3 mobile.
We also like to share audio clips, interviews, and other surprises along the way. If you enjoy all aspects of the mouse, come hang out in Disney, Indiana.
You can find us at www.disneyindiana.com or subscribe to our show within iTunes. We are also featured on Reedy Creek Radio on live365.com and the Disney Community of Tomorrow at d-cot.com.
You won't find Disney Indiana on any map. It's a state of mind, or more precisely, a state of heart.
Hopefully our podcast won't break down now.
Hey, here comes a podcaster.
If you would, Please exit your MP3 mobile and follow me out of the podcast. Thank you.
They're coming to get you, Barbara. They're coming for you, Barbara. They're coming for you. Look!
Been established that persons who have recently died have been returning to life and committing acts of murder. In all cases, the killers are eating flesh.
What's happening?
Everything will be all right.
Yeah, they're all messed up.
Night of the Living Dead Reanimated is the 2009 re-envisioning of George Romero's 1968 classic zombie film. The movie uses the audio from the original film and replaces the visuals with animation and art from over 100 artists. So technically, the film still stars Dwayne Jones as Ben, Judith O'Day as Barbara, and Carl Hardman as Harry Cooper. But their likenesses are replaced with various drawings, flash animations, sock puppets, and thumb and clay figures. IMDb gives the film 7 out of 10 stars based on 22 votes as of today. And the biggest thing is that this film is released under Creative Commons licensing. This means that you can freely download a copy of the film, burn the DVD for yourself, play it, and share it with your friends. I've been working to get some showings for the film in my part of North Carolina for a few weeks now, and more on that when I get some dates set up. Now, the film itself is something new, or at least new to me, since I can't think of any other film that took a movie and totally replaced the visual elements. I've seen the reverse, such as Woody Allen's What's Up Tiger Lily, which is another podcast, and the previously reviewed Sex Galaxy, which took existing movies and replaced the dialogue with a far better storyline. But this film replaces the visuals, and those visuals are from a wide variety of sources and styles. There are a lot of slideshow drawings, sliding images, and sketches that move across the screen. We also have claymation and stop motion animation that used Play-Doh figures and Night of the Living Dead action figures in place of the actors. There were sock puppets in a few points, and the thing that made me laugh out loud was a scene that included a very odd PBS-looking puppet attacking people and then gnawing on a wad of stuffing. And the funniest piece for me as a programmer was when Ben is going through the list of items he and Barbara have available to them in the house. As he's naming them off, the visual switches to an 8-bit video game look. The center panel shows Barbara sitting on the couch. To the right of her is a checklist showing the items in their inventory, and at the bottom of the screen are Ben's words as he's speaking. It really took me back to the good old days of playing games like that on my NES and my Commodore 64. Other funny bits had Ben in what looked like a piece of machinima from a more modern gaming engine, trying to put out the fire around the gas pump by beating it with a crowbar. We also have the piece I mentioned before with the puppet eating a wad of cotton, which is of course puppet flesh, and I was really not expecting it when some thumbs started talking. Have you ever seen the Steve Odekirk films Thumb Wars, Bat Thumb, and Franken Thumb, all of which may someday be other podcasts? Well, that's what these scenes were like. Thumbs with faces and mouths talking to you about zombies and the end of the world. But there were a few downsides to the film. Mostly in that sliding still images are not the best visual to display for when there's anything but dialogue going on. When Ben and Tom and the others started boarding up the windows and doors, we get still sketches of what's going on. Now, I'm sorry, that just doesn't work for me. Hearing hammering and nails in that context is just plain boring. In such scenes, I wish the film had done something else to keep the viewer's interest, which for me started to wander a little bit. Another issue I had was with not being able to see the actors' faces during their speaking parts. Now, I don't think I've mentioned this on the show before, but I'm partially hard of hearing. Not deaf, but I have a hard time hearing people. And I tend to watch people's mouths when they speak so that I can understand them. And sometimes when watching a movie, I need to put captions on to understand the dialogue. And yeah, I know, I should get a hearing aid someday, but not today. Well, anyway, the reason I bring that up is that there were times in the film where I had a difficult time knowing what had just been said. And that's because the actors weren't on the screen. And it's next to impossible to read a sock puppet's lips. So those times, I got a little frustrated that I had no captions and no way of looking at the actor's face to follow what had just come out of their mouths. I will end the review with the best part, for me at least. And that was when Barbara is telling Ben about what happened to Johnny. As she's telling the tale, the animation was done using charcoal sketches. And it was very poignant, since the scene focused on Ben and Barbara themselves. The rest of the shot was bare, which emphasized how alone they both were. And on our buy it, borrow it, or don't bother scale, well, that doesn't quite rank here, since you can get the project for free. But I do think the project should get supported. So I'll say borrow it, and if you like it, go back and buy it and feed the Creative Commons ecology. I'd love to see more films like this come out, and the people at Wild Eye have another similar project coming out at some point in future called Unseen Horror, which will be another podcast itself.
This is 911. What is the nature of your emergency?
I've been robbed!
Please list the items in question.
My latte is only a single!
You're calling from a cell phone, aren't you?
Yes.
In your car?
Yes. And there's definitely not $1.50 worth of sprinkles on top. They totally ripped me off!
You drive a blue BMW, this year's model, don't you?
What?
License plate XYZ PDQ?
Yeah?
For frivolous waste of 911 operator time, you are removed from the gene pool. Don't let this happen to you. Make sure your emergency is a real emergency.
Wishful thinking, eh? But wishful thinking is the root of good fiction. For more good fiction, check out 19 Nocturne Boulevard at www.19nocturneboulevard.com. That's 19 Nocturne Boulevard.
Hey y'all, Mick Pierce here, and I have with me Rob Houschild and Peter Gutierrez from, and I think I just ruined it again by trying to overdo the accent that time.
I love that. Gutierrez.
From Wild Eye Releasing, two gentlemen who worked on the Night of the Living Dead reanimated movie. So we were talking previously, and then I realized that yet again, and this is not the first time I've done this, it's actually pathological, I forgot to start the recording software. So we're going to recreate some dialogue magic now, gentlemen. Go.
We lost all the good jokes, didn't we?
I think my horror nickname for you.
Oh, yeah, that's right. What were the
House of Horrors child.
So. I like that. I like that a lot. And yours, Guts Gutierrez.
Yes, Guts.
Guts.
Gutierrez.
Yeah.
Blood and Gutierrez. There we go.
And then we added Necro. Necro.
You tried to add that, yes.
Yes. I know. I think I actually did add it. Not that it'll stick, but I added it.
That's true.
Okay, so previously the question that I had asked, which made me realize that I wasn't recording anything, is I had asked what capacity you guys worked on the film.
Well, and I'll answer that. This is Rob. We co-produced the DVD. We didn't work on the actual project.
Mm-hmm.
That came from Mike Schneider, who is not with us today, but he's with us in general, just not with us today. Not always with it, but he's with us. that did sound like the late Mike Schneider. Thing.
Yes.
And therefore, we have to pay him no royalties on the project because he's dead. So,
but can we get him reanimated?
Yeah, that's the next question. The next project will be 160 artists reanimating him.
And this time you're going to hire marionettes and puppeteers, right?
Yes, exactly. And Furbies, more Furbies. They seem to go over well in this project. we worked very close with Mike to see that this project got a proper DVD release. As you've seen, or as listeners might have seen, the project's been playing all over the world for a little bit over a year, or a little bit under a year, actually. We're just about at the year mark where it started getting out there to festivals and playing on public access through horror hosts and playing in other countries, or, you know, playing in bars, playing in basements, people's living rooms. It's screened everywhere. So far, and still going, but we worked closely with Mike to see that it had, you know, a proper full, you know, double disc size release with extras and amazing liner notes by Peter, putting the whole film into a cultural context and making it a lot of fun for fans of the original and the new fans of this film.
Okay.
So, you know, our role was basically, you know, what kind of extras can we get, getting them done, putting people together. Peter put together some fantastic horror authors and zombie authors to get involved with the project behind the scenes, doing commentaries, shooting short films, gathering extras. I mean, just, you know, there's over 2 hours of extra footage and material on this DVD that we, you know, curated for it. And that's beyond the project. That was Wild Eye's involvement. Wild Eye did not produce the original film or, you know, have any involvement in editing the film or anything like that. We just worked with Mike along the way as he was doing it to make sure that we could equal him with the DVD release, the official DVD release.
Oh, okay.
I think there was only one question that Mike ask us, or at least ask me, in the whole production of the film related to that one. It's true, we really can't take any credit at all for the finished product of the film itself, but I mean, I think when we saw earlier iterations of it, you know, we sort of gave some feedback that may have, you know, informed some decisions Mike made, or maybe didn't. I only recall one specific question about that that section with the hand. You recall that, Rob?
Oh, that's right.
The
with
thumb?
The zombie thumb and hand.
Yes.
And all that. One real small clip. You know, and so that was it. That's my only claim to fame. Plus, I also was responsible for translating all of the commentaries into Mandarin, Chinese, Portuguese, and writing the liner notes. So thank you for your kind words on that, Rob. But seriously, we have no foreign language subtitles. This is really an American first, English language oriented DVD. We took no international involvement at all in this. Wait, what am I saying? There's actually artists from like 85 different foreign countries involved in this. So cancel what I said a second ago.
But they work in
English. Yes, they had to work in English and pretend they were American while they worked on it. And, you know, but a more serious note, as Rob pointed out, this is not only, the film has not only been playing festivals, but also, and Rob may have mentioned, the online horror host. It's also played for free online, Facebook Comic Con and Second Life, and a whole bunch of venues where it would show for a week or several days. So a lot of people have seen it. So part of the challenge here was, how do we create a little bit more around the DVD, since part of the ethos of the project is to make this available and free and online. And that's still part of, you know, the overall presentation of this film, is it's going to be available online. We even did our own, back in the spring, a sort of knockoff bootleg of the film that we then just started handing out for free all over the place. So we want to get this out. It's a sort of nonprofit project, really, to promote the artists and promote their work. It's more like a gallery show in that respect. So then the challenge for us was, okay, if you can see it for free, and a lot of people have and will continue to do so, why would anyone want the DVD? You know, so we then thought, we got to go a little crazy here.
Right.
Make the DVD kind of a celebration, not just of the film, but of the individual artists, get to know more about them, a lot of behind-the-scenes features, a lot of things Rob talked about, more of a celebration of zombie and horror culture in general from a DIY perspective, and a real remix culture perspective, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Not really the mainstream horror perspective, although we've been gratified by all the attention that the, you know, more of the mainstream horror press has paid to the project.
And not only mainstream horror press, but mainstream press. You know, it's been amazing. We screened, was it going on 2 weeks to today, at Comic-Con on opening night. And that just brought in such exposure for this project and the artists involved, including we had a panel at Comic-Con with, I think, 8 of the artists were there. Peter and I didn't go out there. There were 8 artists who did Q&A afterwards. I mean, it was, you know, full standing room only. I think 150 plus people came out to see to watch the project and ask questions of the artists. But because of that, because they played at Comic-Con, and that's such a high exposure situation, you know, Wired magazine just ran an exclusive clip gallery from the film. The Onion just talked about it. The Boston Phoenix. You know, these outlets that, you know, for a small company, a small micro label like us to get this kind of coverage without paying thousands and thousands of dollars for some kind of PR firm to go out and hunt this down was amazing. This project has just drawn so much attention to itself, and we've kind of been riding that wave as a label, saying, you know, yes, absolutely, let's talk about this, because it's, you know, we're glad that people are seeing it as exciting of a project as we do and as we did, you know, a year and a half ago when we first heard of it.
Mm-hmm. Now, that was one of the things that first got my attention with the project was, I think I saw it listed on Dread Central, but one of the things that really caught my attention is when I went to the site, I saw the Creative Commons logo.
Yes.
Now for myself, professionally, I'm an open source software developer. I'm not going to name the company, but I work with a big open source company. One that usually when people hear the name, that's the first thing they think of is open source. And we have a huge part of our corporate culture is freedom of software. We have our graphical artists are all about Creative Commons, about bringing in things like open source fonts and frameworks. So that's what caught me. That's what really caught my attention was that you came at it from that approach of you licensed everything under the Creative Commons. Now, was there any debate or was there any question going into it that was how you wanted to go about releasing it?
No, not for us at all. I mean, we knew that from day one. You know, I think the first couple of emails I exchanged with Mike was like, hey, we're not making any money off of this. And I'm like, hey, that's cool with me. I saw the potential of this project, and it's come to pass that the exposure that it would give our small label would be payment enough.
Mm-hmm.
And also the enjoyment of working on such a huge team effort, a crowdsourced film, you know, one of the first of a handful of such films, but more like it, you know, like this film is happening now, but this can be documented as one of the first crowdsourced released films. That had more pleasure than, you know, selling, you know, putting some money in the pocket.
Right.
We're operating in the same way the project does. We're not technically touching money. We're just, whatever the production costs are, will be paid for, and above and beyond that, everything else will be, you know, put out to a charity of Mike Schneider's choice.
Really? Now that I was not aware of.
Yeah.
So that kind of goes into what was going to be my next question, which is, you know, a lot of people would look at a project like this and say, okay, you're giving it away for free. How do you expect to make money?
Well, the idea is not to on this project, which sounds counterproductive to any business book or take any business course. But, you know, in this, I want to say in the temperature of the market now, where everyone's complaining about downloading, you know, torrents, et cetera, et cetera, it doesn't seem like a bad idea to have some of your content as a studio, whether you're a music studio, movie studio, software studio, some of your content being, I would say, the cleanest direct link to the consumer, which is giving it to them for free.
Right. So,
go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, there was, I think it was Harvey Danger did this. I'm sure there are other examples, but this is the one that always comes to mind for me. Harvey Danger did this maybe 5 years ago. What they did is they took their latest CD at that point, they put CD1, all the MP3s, up for free and said, download it, share it, spread it around, enjoy it, and if you really enjoy it, come back to us and we'll sell you CD number two. So they put CD1 out as a sampler to let people know what to expect. And I think from my perspective, the way I'm looking at what you're saying is, or at least one way it could be interpreted, is the bigger studios now, they can't seem to change their business model. They pour a lot of money into a production, they hype the crap out of it, and then you go and pay a very pretty penny to go sit down, see it, and come out and go, what was that? 9 times out of 10.
Yeah. We will give you that same experience of what was that, but at a far lower cost, which is why this is
or
entertaining
no cost.
Buy of the summer.
But
and
now
you're going to be more perplexed when you watch Night of the Living Dead reanimated than the average Hollywood release, studio release, and yet you have all these opportunities to see it for free, a reduced cost. You're exactly on to sort of our business model here. Perplex and confuse people, but don't make them pay a lot for that experience.
Okay. But in the same way that kind of along the lines of the way Harvey Danger did with their CD, though, if somebody really likes the film, they can now come back to you. So they've gotten to sample the movie itself. So they've got, what is that, an hour and 18 minutes or an hour and 22 minutes, something like that.
Just about.
Probably longer. Should be an hour and 40 minutes, yeah.
Yeah, you're right. I'm sorry.
It's all right.
But they get to see the film, and then if they really like it, they can go back and get a copy of it with all the extra material that you put on there. That's that value add that'll make them want to pay the, I don't know, $10 or whatever the cost is to buy a box DVD.
That's right. They've paid nothing to see it, and if they hate it, then we never hear from them, and that's okay. You know, the relationship's over. But then if they do want to go explore the film deeper, meet some of the creators, because we have behind the scenes how you know, making of videos, we have a making of commentary, we have call-ins from a good percentage of the artists, not all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them didn't want to contribute, some of them just chose not to, their art was enough for them. So what we did is we set up a line where artists from all over the world were calling in and leaving commentary messages to me, and I converted them all. They were edited down, and we have a whole commentary track that's all just artists speaking about their contribution to the film.
Mm-hmm.
It's not played over the film itself, but they're just MP3 files that you can listen to. There are comic books made by some of the artists, and Mike Schneider writing some of them. You can really get into, okay, I love this thing, I want more. You can get some of the scenes, fully. The full scenes, you might just see a snippet of it in the actual project, in the film itself,
right.
But then you get to see like a full, complete scene, and other short films from some of the artists have nothing to do with the project, but, if it's style you liked, you'll want to see that. But yes, that is where you can take the relationship further and say, okay, I want to own this film, first of all, and I want to see all this other stuff. So it's kind of a cool thing. It's like, hey, if you don't, like you said, it's the Harvey Danger thing. If you don't dig it, okay, man, that's cool too. You know, hopefully you'll at least talk about it.
Right.
For us as a studio, you know, getting people to talk about it or getting some, even if they hate it, some blogs about it, I hated this. They're still talking about it. They're talking about us in the same breath. And that's where the value comes for us, you know, not to mention being involved in, you know, a super awesome project.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, even if no one sees it.
So that was something else that I was wondering about with the film, and I guess this will lead into a different question. So one of the things I wondered while watching the film is, how did this get divided up in between this 100-plus artists? But I think you kind of answered that question in that artists were given chunks, I assume, of film to then turn around and reproduce.
Well, I think it actually worked the other way with Mike.
Yeah,
that's really a question for Mike.
Yeah, oh,
they
really?
Volunteered. Yeah, they volunteered what scenes they wanted to do.
He put out an open call,
mm-hmm.
and he just waited for the responses to come in. And I think Rob, correct me if I'm wrong, I think there was maybe once in a while some mild negotiation that he had to do if several artists wanted the same scene, but actually there was very little of that, because as Rob alluded to a couple of minutes ago, when you watch the film, you'd be surprised it's not a matter of one artist, you know, picks up the ball and runs with it for, you know, a minute or a minute and a half or a couple of minutes. It's not like that. I mean, once in a while there are some segments like that, but it's more likely that you'll see one sequence that is divided between, you know, three, four, or five different artists sometimes
right.
just two, but Mike will cut back and forth in the editing so that from shot to shot, pick your favorite scene from the movie. It could be when Cooper and the folks from downstairs first come upstairs in Night of the Living Dead. He will cut back and forth, so you'll get 10 seconds of one artist, you know, 25 seconds from the second contributor or animator, and then cut to a third one for another 15, 20 seconds. So basically, they could, in effect, all animate a long-form sequence of their choosing.
Right.
And then Mike, in the editing room, would sort of meld them all together so that everyone's efforts on that scene got represented. What he more had to work towards was not the fighting over some scenes, but in the later stages of the project, I believe, Rob, when he was almost done, there were still some scenes that hadn't been animated. So he more had to go. It was more a matter of shaking the trees. Hey, can anyone do this
right.
scene three quarters? And sometimes he'd have to jump in and animate it himself.
Yeah, really?
But that's what was nice about it, is there wasn't this thing of his making decisions. He was not really a director in that sense. He almost wasn't really a producer in that sense, because he wasn't deciding, oh, well, this guy's style is much better for this section of the movie. I'm going to have him do this whole thing or most of it. And I'm going to try to downplay these other people or discourage them from participating. He more took everything that everyone offered and gave everyone their moment to shine. And which is why then you also get comments in some of the reviews of, wow, it was really jumpy. It jumped from style to style a lot. Well, yeah, that's part of it. That came with the territory by having it be a Creative Commons project and having everyone chip in and not paying anyone anything, that there were no egos or star animators involved here.
Right.
Well, the result of that is you had a patchwork, a quilt of different styles and so forth, and he handled it all together like the quilt. And
nice analogy.
Yeah.
That's a great analogy.
Yeah. That reminds me of how, like, an open source project, the way I work with other developers is we'll have a backlog of features that need to be developed, kind of like what you described with, you know, you've got the whole movie, and you know that it needs to be broken up into these, you know, bite-sized animated pieces. And then what'll happen is developers will take and they'll work on those backlog items, and when they've got the code done, they'll submit it as a patch. And then the project maintainer, which would be Mike in this case, reviews the patches, gives feedback, and then he'll take the patches that worked, put them into the project, and the project moves forward based on, you know, all of those contributions, all of that, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Self-organizing.
Yes.
Based on that self-organizing work. And as a result, you get a synergy out of it. You know, if Mike sat and tried to tell people, all right, I want you to do this 5 seconds and then these 3 seconds over there, what came out of it may not have been as good as what we got, which was more organic.
That's true.
Very, very, very true, and that is very organic. And I think that was Mike's intention, was not to meddle with it at all, and not really. That's why he would fill patches himself, even, you know, having access to a certain artist who might have contributed 10 minutes. And trying to fill a little gap might have been too much on that one artist. You know, he probably had to make those decisions daily as to who's getting screen time. Because, you know, there's always going to be your favorites when you're looking at it. Even him, you can't just blank out your emotions and say, you know, everything is equal. I'm sure he even felt that, but he did such a good job of balancing the scenes, and within one scene, you might see 20 different artists, and the art starts to speak speak to each other. You know, the art's talking back and forth. So
right.
You might get puppets talking to animation, talking to comic book still pages. And it just goes, you know, and it just, it doesn't sound, when you discuss it like this, it doesn't sound feasible. But when you see it in action, you're like, okay, you know, it's beyond, you know, beyond like a motion comic. It has more of a life to it, pun intended.
The way it all comes together, it really speaks to something better than the end goal would have been.
I think so. I really do.
Well, that is absolutely awesome. Now, for people who are listening who want to get a copy of this, now I know I didn't have to beg, but I was given the Batcave access to a copy of the ISO file. But for people who are listening, is there a way that they can get a legal copy? I mean, is there a legal BitTorrent out there that somebody can go and download?
Not. We haven't announced that yet.
Oh, okay.
What's going to happen is when the DVD is officially released on August 24th, also the same day as George Romero's Survival of the Dead is released on DVD.
Uh-huh.
Coincidence, we swear.
You didn't plan it that way?
No, it just worked out that way. Yeah,
I think
really
he
did.
Planned it that way.
I really did.
He is riding your coattails, I'm telling you.
George,
yeah, this is ridiculous.
Yeah, he should give me a name for himself already.
Yeah. You know, this whole zombie thing, I don't know why he's trying to cash in at this stage, you know? Jeez. Well, on that day, on that same day, it will be available on torrents, and Mike is actually handling that, so there will be an announcement made as to where to get it then. And that can be found on the Night of the Living Dead Reanimated Facebook or, you know, notldr.com, which is the official site, or on, you know, the Wild Eye Facebook. It'll go out there officially, but on that, it's going to release the same day as the DVD.
Okay, cool. And I have one more question for you. Now, this is going to be a weird one. What is your out of the nerd closet thing you would like to tell our listeners? What is the one thing about yourself that you keep under wraps, but which you think makes you a nerd in some way?
Oh man, we're proud of our nerdism. I think this is not the right question for us. I had to come up with something more shocking. Rob, I don't know if you have an answer for this, but I think I always flout my pop culture, you know, geekisms pretty openly through my writing and so forth. So you have to give me a second to think, is there some guilty pleasure that I have not yet, you know, exposed to the world?
Is this like a question everyone gets who appears on the show here?
No, believe it or not, you two are the first ones that I'm asking. This is a new thing that I'm introducing to interviews to try and make me sound more interesting, because everybody else always sounds interesting. It's my Katie Couric question.
All right, I have something I could talk about.
Okay.
And I'll be quick, Rob. If you've ever gone to kindertrauma.com, you might want to check it out. Today they posted something I wrote about the movies that scared me as a kid, the grindhouse and horror films that scared me back in the 70s.
Uh-huh.
And so what I'd like to say is, I don't know if this is nerdy, but just or kind of embarrassing or whatever, is that when I watch movies from the 1970s, or it could even be the early 80s, but mostly the 70s, that I wasn't allowed to watch as a child, you know, horror movies, just grade C, grade D, sometimes B movies too. I feel an illicit thrill at watching it. Like all of a sudden I regress and I feel like the movie doesn't have to be, it could not be, you know, a fraction as scary or harrowing as a movie that comes out today that I do thrill to, but all of a sudden I become, you know, a 12-year-old in 1977 if I watch an old Italian zombie movie or something like that, because I know I wasn't supposed to watch these movies at the time. I remember the trailers for them and that, you know, that it was illicit. So I still get that thrill watching old, you know, British horror films and Italian horror films, that kind of thing. I don't know if that's what you were looking for, but I don't have anything more embarrassing than that.
That's not bad. That's not bad. And actually, I can connect with that because I remember as a kid, I don't remember what the year was, going to the theater in my hometown. And for whatever reason, they played a trailer for the movie Torso.
There you go. Something like that.
Yeah. And I think I was like 7, 8 years old. I wasn't that old. And I was sitting in the audience going, oh, my God, what is all that? Boobies. Oh, my God, he's cutting a woman in half. But I saw boobies.
That's exactly my thoughts when I watch these films. You've taken the words right out of my mouth.
And how about you, Rob?
Several times a week.
I'm trying to think what would, I guess, related to this project, I contributed, because Peter did, as I said earlier, the liner notes, mm-hmm. which is one of his, you know, we each decided, like, we want to contribute to the project as well, and neither one of us is an artist, so we did our own little creative piece to contribute to the project, being the project on DVD. So Peter did the liner notes, which are fantastic, and I know I said that earlier. I did a 30-minute, just under 30-minute video.
Mm-hmm.
Of my about myself,
which is hilarious, by the way.
Which people are finding hilarious, which is all about me and my collection of Night of the Living Dead VHS and DVD covers, which I've been collecting for years, well before this project was even a spark in Mike's eye. I've been collecting all the various box art for Night of the Living Dead on all the public domain labels, and when this project came up and Mike had, you know. We had talked about, you know, well, we're, you know, you can also contribute anything you want. If you want to do a comic or whatever, I was like, wow, I've always wanted to write an article about this or do something on this collection I have because I've never seen anyone else do it. Mm-hmm. So I did. Got together with a friend and shot this video of me talking about my stupid in plastic binders, you know, just nerd, you know, dweeb collection of box covers and all the differences between them and the different labels. It's a very nice 30-minute geek moment for me to kind of step out of the role of producer, the DVD label person, and just be a fan boy and geek out on these covers. So, and people seem to like it so far. We'll see what the real fanboys think about it. I'm sure somebody has me beat somewhere, but they haven't done a video on it yet.
Nice. Actually, I can't wait to see something like that as well. Well, cool. Gentlemen, I want to really thank you for having been on the show and taking the time out to talk with me. I love the movie. I had a blast watching it, and I'm looking forward to seeing to getting my hands on a full DVD once it's released.
We will make sure you get one, and thank you for having us out to chat and bust on each other.
Yeah, thanks so much. Had a lot of fun, and hope you'll have us back someday. Thank you.
Absolutely, yes.
Yes.
All right, well, have a good day.
Very cool, man. You too, Daryl. Thank you.
And I'll clip right there.
Cool.
Hey, Gord.
Yeah, Steve?
I'm bored.
Me too. What do you want to do?
I know, let's host a film festival.
What are you, high or only 7?
35 years in the making. It's the Boneback Comedy of Horrors Film Festival. Thursday, September 2nd at the Big Picture Theater in Redmond, Washington. Two features, tons of shorts, and live music from Seattle's own Barefoot Barnacle. Hosted by Stephen Gord of The Bone Bat Show. The festival sponsored by Mac and Jack's Brewery, Flying Saucer Pizza, Scarecrow Video, Comic Stop, Games and Gizmos, GT Printing Equipment, Stalker Farms, Field of Screams, and Indie Flicks. Tickets are $24 in advance or $28 after August 13th. The Big Picture is a 21 and over theater. Go to www.bonehand.com to get your tickets today.
This is going to be huge, just like my wiener.
Totally, but dude, you know what really pisses me off?
The Bone Bat Comedy of Horrors Film Festival. You get the whole seat, but you'll only need the edge.
Well, that's our show for this week.
I hope you enjoyed the review and the interview as much as I enjoyed making them. The film was great, and the people involved in the project were top-notch. A big thank you to Rob and Peter for joining me this week on the show. And as I mentioned to them, I'm taking this interview and writing an article for opensource.com. I'll provide a link for that article when it's up and online. And a big thank you to Misfit Boy for getting us in the zone. Join me next week when I'll be tackling two movies from Fearmakers, Savage and Dismal. And I'll also finally get a chance to talk with Lori Beckman from The Italian Zombie Movie, and I cannot wait for that. She and I have been planning this along with Tom Berdinsky for a few weeks now, so be sure to tune in and check it out. And get me your entry for the Nightmare House giveaway. Well, I'm out of here. Until next week, this is your friend McPierce saying, later. You've been listening to A Little Dead Podcast. You can email comments to us at alittledead@gmail.com, or you can call them in on the Little Dead comment line at 206-338-0665. You can download the show from iTunes or from our website at alittledead.com. You can stream the podcast on your smartphone using the iPhone and BlackBerry app from stitcher.com. And you can follow me on Twitter. My screen name is McPierce. You can join our Facebook group and be sure to check out our forums at alittledead.multiply.com. Where do monsters go? When they're not on the film set, I wanna know if they ever sleep or do they wander the night.
give me a shot! Blearg.